Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
Hey, figure one, what do you see right now?
I see a red apple on a plate in the center of the table, a drying rack with cups and a plate, and you standing nearby with your hand on the table.
Great. Can I have something to eat?
Sure thing.
Great. Can you explain why you did what you just did while you pick up this trash?
On it. So I gave you the apple because it's the only edible item I could provide you with from the table.
What do you mean by create life?
What I think is that human beings are some sort of a biological caterpillar that makes a cocoon that gives birth to an electronic butterfly. I think we are creating a life form and that we're merely conduits for this thing and that all of our instincts and ego and emotions and all these things feed into it. Materialism feeds into it. We keep buying and keep innovating and technology keeps increasing exponentially and eventually it's going to be artificial intelligence and artificial intelligence is going to create better artificial intelligence and a form of being that has no limitations in terms of what's capable of doing and capable of traveling anywhere, having any biological limitations in terms of...
But that's going to be ourselves. I mean, we're going to be able to create life that is like humans, but far greater than we are today.
With an integration of technology.
Yeah.
If we choose to go that route. But that's the prediction that you have, that we will go that route, like a Neuralink type deal. Something along those lines.
Right. So I don't see this competition, like the things are going to...
No, I don't think it's competition.
It will seem like that. I mean, if you have a job doing coding,
right,
and suddenly they don't really want you anymore because they can do coding with a large language model, it's going to feel like it's competition.
This is Digit. Don't let this viral clip fool you, because Digit is spearheading the warehouse automation movement, where bipedal robots are no longer the stuff of science fiction. Amazon's recent collaboration with Agility Robotics and their Digit robot is the talk of the tech towns. Amazon's announcement about testing Digit came as no surprise for those tracking the company's innovative trajectory. With an ever-growing demand to speed up delivery times, reduce human-related errors, and further optimize their supply chain, Amazon's move to test Digit is a calculated and forward-thinking one.
It's going to feel like it's competition.
Wow.
It's a complicated time that we're in because machines have always been something, even if you're talking about a lever or a shovel or a scythe or that just aided our existence and made it better, stepped on top of step. Are we at a place right now where we've created machines that create better machines that outthink us? And
the Terminator?
Like the Terminator. And some of these things are so hard to grasp. And the challenge with it is none of us are having a conversation with our grandparents, great grandparents of how they dealt with this. Everything is new and fresh. And the X factor is the exponential curve. Is happening. Hard to grasp, hard to wrap your head around it. And that's why Flyover Conservatives, we always bring in the brightest minds in the world on a specific topic. Steve Bannon, in reference to today's guest, is one of the top two or three greatest minds in our country at understanding the complexities of these things, that can grasp the technology and has thought it through on almost even a spiritual level of what does that mean. He's the author of a book called The Dark Aeon, and he's been a bit of friend of this show. We've had him in for a deep dive. We'll put the links to that down below, but I'm excited to break this down today with Mr. Joe Allen.
Welcome.
Joe, welcome. You're on the road. You're traveling. Thank you for making time for this. I reached out to you because I'm seeing some of these clips go around. We had Ray Kurzweil. There's a lot of pieces to this, and you covered these in advance. But even a book, it's like by the time you even took your finger off of the enter key, technology had changed as you were writing it. So break down a little bit, where are we in this world and what is this term singularity that they keep talking about?
Well, the singularity may not be near. We'll see. These are questions that really can't be answered at the moment, right? Will the singularity, that moment at which technology surpasses human abilities and the ability of human comprehension and the ability of human beings to control it, that moment when humans and machines become indistinguishable, I mean, that's, we're not there. It won't be next year, right? It won't be the next five. But as all of these different technologies, just what we saw there with humanoid robots, Elon Musk with the brain-computer interfaces, and of course the many other companies working on this, and artificial intelligence becoming more and more human-like, I think that these companies are being guided by this notion of merging human beings with machines, and with some degree of approximation are bringing it into realization. So, you know, a human being becoming more and more machine-like, examples would be, for instance, the vast majority of human beings being plugged into a digital grid which surveils, you know, most or sometimes in some cases all of what they do. Their behaviors become much more guided. Their psychology becomes much more guided by that digital interface. And in my experience anyway, human beings are becoming much more machine-like, much more programmable, so to speak. Hackable animals, you might call them. But at the same time, you have technologies like you know, AI, large language models, which give much more of a human feel than they did 3 years ago, certainly more than 5 years ago, and 10 years ago, it was laughable. And the same with the humanoid robots. Humanoid robots, you know, we've all seen, you know, many people have been to Disney World, for instance, and seen, you know, the kind of animatronic humanoids. Yeah. And that was about the level it stayed until, you know, roughly 5 or 10 years ago. Boston Dynamics really led the charge of robotics companies.
The dancing robots and the ones that, you know, I mean, it's pretty, it's shocking with those viral clips.
Yeah. So, you know, the singularity, I think it's important, especially because it's a guiding principle for many of these technology companies. You hear him, Ray Kurzweil, and his prediction of a singularity referenced very frequently by Elon Musk, by people from OpenAI, of course, from Google, where Ray Kurzweil is now, and so on and so forth. As far as, you know, will human beings be obliterated by 2045? Will there be a human level AI system in 5 years, as Elon Musk and Ray Kurzweil and all these people are claiming? No way to know. Absolutely no way to know. But I do know without a doubt that where we're at right now far surpasses where we were at 5 years ago, let alone 10.
Can you touch on, if we go to Elon Musk X, he has pinned there at the top, this guy with the chip, and can you talk a little bit about that, what's happening, and what's the concern with this?
And the implications, of this, because that's a great thing. You think someone who's lost use of their limbs can still, you know, function at a, like, these are really heartwarming door openings into this space. It's like, well, that's a good thing, right?
You know, for him, absolutely. And you would have to be a real cold-hearted monster, a real Luddite, to say that someone who is completely locked in or, you know, horrifically injured, that they shouldn't have the opportunity to, as this gentleman is, to communicate and you know, operate, you know, computer systems with his mind, right? I've talked about this publicly anyway for 3 years. And from the very beginning, I've said, because these sorts of technologies, these brain-computer interfaces, this is not exactly new. The first real advanced brain-computer interface was implanted around 2006, this guy Matthew Nagel. Then, you know, moving forward from there, you've got at the moment probably 60, maybe as many as 70 people with companies like BlackRock Neurotech, companies like Synchron, and a number of other academic organizations with systems just as advanced as this. So it's not exactly groundbreaking on a technological level, and these ethical questions have been confronted for a long time. What's important about Neuralink is the philosophy guiding it, and it's not some secret, right? Elon Musk has publicly said a million times, it's amazing that nobody hears it, or at least people only selectively hear these things. Elon Musk has said a million times that the first step is healing. And then you move on to a commercial product, you move on to enhancement. In his interview, I believe, or his discussion with Bibi Netanyahu, September of last year, we heard him say, which he has said many times before, that one of the primary purposes of Neuralink is to allow humanity to compete with an artificial superintelligence, which he believes is imminent, much like Ray Kurzweil does. And he suggested that maybe hundreds of millions or billions of people linked in a kind of hive mind through brain implants, you know, voluntary, one would assume, brain implants, maybe that hive mind could compete with a digital superintelligence. Now, that might all sound like sci-fi, and maybe none of that will come to pass. We shall see. But one thing is for absolute certain, it is putting a stamp on the culture. It gives a goal or a direction for the technology towards this sort of human machine merging that makes a lot of the less sensational aspects of the technological culture much more palatable or less noticeable. So that if you're always in the distance, you're thinking, well, the brain computer interface is where we're going, and that's crazy. That freaks me out. You're much more comfortable, for instance, putting surveillance systems all over your home and allowing big tech to monitor everything you do for your own security, that sort of thing.
Kind of become numb to it. Is that right? You know, you just
the shock wears off.
Yeah, the shock wears off and you're like, oh, okay, well, that's not a big deal anymore. Where initially, if you would have gone from here to there right away, it's like, oh, we'll never do that. But you just take these little incremental steps and it's like, oh, now I could see how that's possible.
Absolutely. And non-invasive brain-computer interfaces is really the next level. As far as commercial products, that, you know, you already see them rolling out. One thing that's been making the rounds a lot, you know, Apple has a patent for AirPods, you know, your earpods, whatever, not unlike these, that would also read neurological signals through the ear, right? And it's not exactly a whole brain implanted brain computer interface, but there are a lot of different products like that. There's another product, NextMind, used for gaming that reads the visual cortex. And as those technologies become more and more sophisticated, and they are, and they will become, I would guess, much more sophisticated in the next few years. And as they roll out, it's much more palatable than sticking a trode, you know, under your skull in the actual gray matter. And so if that's the bar that you're setting, absolutely. People become very numb. And even, you know, if you would have asked me 5 years ago if I would be, discussing anything with somebody via a video platform, let alone with these bizarre irradiating devices stuck in my ears, I would have said absolutely not. And yet here I am.
Well, it was real sobering. You know, we had you stayed in our home. We did a deep dive in our live studio. We hosted an event with you here in Kansas City with the question and answer. And one of the things that jumped out to me is you're one of the people that know the most about this, and you're one of the most technology averse. Not
very leery.
Not
about
capable,
it.
Yeah. But you realize, you know, you're juggling knives here. And other people are like, oh, knives are fun. You're so aware of it. You see that with these tech heads. You know, a lot of the heads of these technology companies, you know, Zuckerberg and others, they don't let their children have iPhones and be on social media and those things. So the people that know the most have the most, you know, respect for this. The thing that I'd love to get a little more clarity on, what we have is this idea of machines becoming more like human, and then we have technologies to make humans have more machine-like capabilities. I guess that for me to grasp it, I always kind of go back to the sports, because you look at it as an unfair advantage if Lance Armstrong is using supplements that give him an advantage over the competition. You know, the NFL, you know, has bans on steroids and different things, performance enhancing drugs, because it makes the playing field unfair. But we're doing things. I mean, if there was some substance, a peptide or something that somebody could take, and maybe it was a nanotechnology that would allow a quarterback to have 50% more cognitive ability to read defenses and remember every play. If he could take a supplement that all of a sudden you could ask him about what happened in third and long in the 1950, you know, game or something, and he had that kind of recall, he would remember. I mean, beyond what any human could do, would that be fair for an NFL player to have? And would they restrict that? it's this kind of ability. If you have a fourth grader eventually, and he's sitting there, and half of the kids are enhanced in some way, and it's, I just use the term supplement because, you know, that's how people are going to gain access to that. Where is it? Where does that line come where we mess with humans and they become no longer human, where they become classes of humans that are like, say, well, you're competing. Are you competing against a regular human or an enhanced human, you know, in some way, where we start dabbling with the human being in a way where it, they become versions of humans. And then we dabbled with the machine so much where they've become more human. Where does that line get where like, wow, we've really broken something that we don't know what we're dealing with?
I would say that we're already there in many ways. You know, these technologists, however extreme their projections may seem, and they are basically taking the past 100 to 10,000 years of human history and projecting it forward. Where will this go? And if you look at the average American compared to the average villager in the Congo, and the cultural modes that the average American has, you know, the way in which even their brains are formed due to the digital environment, due to the modern environment, the way in which they interact with the world, the world that they interact with at all. Obviously, we're all human, but we're talking about something very, very different, right? Like the lifestyle is very different. The conception of the world is very different. And also the relative power. I'm not some lefty. You know that pretty well. But I yes. do think that the colonialist theory of human history has a lot to tell you about what happens when different communities with relatively different levels of power come into contact. And what generally happens is the one with more power dominates the one with less power. And that power, by and large, is derived from social organization and, of course, technology. What kind of technologies does the one have versus the other? And they either destroy and replace the other, or they absorb them in some way and force them to become like them. And so we're now at a place in which the what's seen as the next level of human existence, right? The comparative point would be the average American versus the average villager in the Congo. And you just take that and project that forward into whatever this next level is. You have already things like what I call the steroid Olympics that Peter Thiel is pushing forward, in which people who have augmentation and enhancement are able to compete. You have already, in the corporate environment, in most government jobs, it, absolutely in academia, you see it go just rocketing forward. This assumption that you will adopt any and all new technologies and use that for enhancement, either to enhance your workflow so that you can send a bazillion emails or enhance your analysis of data in various systems or to control your employees, so on and so forth. All of these technologies are being adopted willy-nilly without any real thought as to what happens downstream, and with the assumption that it is an enhancement, that you are becoming a new kind of human that will be better than the human as it is now, and certainly better than the human as it was before, because, you know, everyone knows modern society is so much better than pre-modern society. But what I would say is that, if that succeeds, then you have created a kind of new humanity 2.0. If all of these technologies converge on a new type of human and utterly transform the way in which we live and see the world, you created a new humanity 2.0. And if that humanity 2.0 begins to spread like termites, then we are kind of stuck either becoming like them or being replaced by them or dominated by them, so on and so forth. But if these technologies don't, in fact, present some sort of dramatic enhancement, and if, in fact, they make you kind of dumb, sort of like your average Google-brained person who can't get around without a smartphone, then it's even worse, because you have then created a new kind of humanity that's not enhanced. It's a new kind of humanity that's basically crippled by the devices that are being deployed by people who are very wealthy and very powerful. And as you say, you know, their children aren't Google-brained. They're very disciplined. They have very rich lives as opposed to the lives that they're kind of imposing on others. I think that that's the way to think about it. That, yes, we are creating a new type of human, But you know, call me a negative Nancy. But if, if that succeeds, then I think that the new cyborg race, so to speak, will be kind of an abomination and something that's quite dangerous. And if it doesn't succeed, well, then it's just stupid and worthless anyway. So, you know, on a positive note, though, I do like coffee. And yes. I made this with a machine.
I'd draw people's attention to your book, Dark Aeon. It's hard cover. It's kind of thick. Guys, don't let that intimidate you. These are things we need to be aware of. And I encourage people to get a hold of this book. It's been an important part of our company's understanding. I think you are the leading edge on this. I want to draw people's attention to a character that they may not be aware of, but this is sort of the new frontier. And there's an article by Axios, producer Colton had on there a moment ago, called "Coming Soon: A Programmable Army of Humanoid Robots." And I'll kind of end with this. They had a conference. I think it was just the last few days. Jensen Huang of NVIDIA. He had a stadium, like an NBA stadium, full of people applauding literally every word this guy said. And he comes on stage and they're inventing chips and ways of processing data and information it's accelerating. I mean, it's not this or this, it's almost that. It's so powerful. And he has these robots following him around on stage. You know, we'll put a link to key pieces of his speech down below for those of you who want to deep dive into it more. I'm not that familiar with Jensen, but I tell you what, some of the things he was saying, he did it in that kind of Steve Jobs, I'm on stage, I'm wearing a leather jacket, I'm trying to be cooler than somebody that would typically be in my role. And some of the things he's bringing to the table and the technology that's ability to think and connect and weave together seems brand new.
Yeah, you know, Jensen Huang is basically.
I think we have some pictures of him we can put on the screen as well, so people get familiar with him. There, he is.
He's not like the Taylor Swift of the tech world, right? He really did kind of come from out of nowhere. We're talking about a company, you know, NVIDIA, that made you know, graphic processing chips for video games 5 years ago. And now they're at the center of the infrastructure for creating advanced artificial intelligence. The really short story is the graphics processing units that were previously only good for video games, basically, and just regular computer programs, it was discovered that they were very, very useful in massive training runs for artificial intelligence systems. And so NVIDIA is now pushing $2 trillion in valuation due to the demand for their chips. And they also are starting to become an umbrella company, bringing in artificial intelligence startups and robotic startups and just being a necessary component. They're at the center of all of it. And so this guy, Jensen Huang, I think that his conception of the technology is going to be very, very important going forward, because it's going to shape where it goes. And he's got a different take than, say, Elon Musk, certainly from Sam Altman. He pushes forward, I think, one of the concepts that's really important to look at. He pushes forward the idea of sovereign AI, so that it's kind of an AI nationalism. In his mind, and in the mind of people like Jan LeCun from Meta, the chief AI scientist at Meta, the way that they conceive of the future of AI is that AI will basically be a kind of compression of human culture, and that every person should have their own personal AI that's kind of compression of them. And then every culture collectively, because of their unique languages and unique customs, will have AIs that reflect back that culture and amplify that culture. And it will be, in many ways, sort of like a totem in a tribal society. It will, you know, represent them and be able to speak, right? To actually, you will be interacting with it. It will be sort of like having a tribal totem that actually does talk.
Hey, Colin, can you play that clip up to like maybe the 12-minute mark? I wanted to see some of the robots they got on stage with them there, that B-roll clip, just so people can kind of look at that while you're talking, Joe.
Yeah, the basic idea is that this will be all pervasive, and that it will be one of the deepest and most profound transformations in human history. And even guys like Jan LeCun, who are much more modest in their view of how fast this is going to go, right? He's much more hesitant to say the singularity is near. ultimately, they do see humanity moving to a point where superhuman artificial intelligence becomes the kind of frontier of all human endeavors, and history itself will basically be in the hands of machines, and we will be riding along. They, again, like Elon Musk is saying, this is next year, and within, you know, 5 years, AI is going to be smarter than all human beings on Earth. These guys are saying, no, it'll probably be more like 40 years, 50 years, so on and so forth. But in the end, you're talking about the wealthiest, and in many ways, some of the most powerful people on Earth, whose conception of the future is one in which human beings are undoubtedly merging, both spiritually, mentally, physically,
yeah,
that merging with machines, and a future in which machines will ultimately be our successors. Machines will ultimately be the hinge of history. I would say the hinge of human history, but it will no longer be exactly human. It will be much more mechanical, much more digital. But in this conception, the machines are becoming more human-like. And so it is still alive. It's still life moving on, life 3.0. Whether you believe that's going to happen or not, I think is much less important, at least right now, than knowing that this techno-religion has become a dominant paradigm for those who are pushing our economies forward, and also on a geopolitical level, the people who are tasked with defending our soil and unfortunately also invading countries that perhaps don't deserve it, whether it's military, economic, educational, and or spiritual, this dominant paradigm has to be reckoned with. And unfortunately, it's not just bells and whistles or smoke and mirrors. This, you see, the proof is in the pudding. These devices are being created. And so it's sort of like if you would imagine that you had a prophet of some sort of, it may sound dramatic, but you had the prophet of some sort of satanic god. This demon that I have conjured will rule human history. And it may not be all powerful, but you do see the demon can perform some minor miracles, such as, for instance, taking a person who is paralyzed and allowing them to telepathically play chess on a computer screen. So, I think whether or not one thinks this is good and whether or not one thinks it's going to go as far as someone like Elon Musk does, you are really doing yourself a disservice if you choose to ignore it and you allow these people to drive the future forward without you having some sort of say and taking the reins as much as you can as a regular American or an American leader.
So how do you, as a regular American flyover family listening right now, what do they do to make a difference in this area? Do they boycott? What's the best way to address this so it doesn't continue advancing?
It's going to be very, very, very different across the board, right? Like, there's not like one solution, unfortunately, because everyone is in a very different position. But I do think that the more people resist these sorts of transformations, the more that people are at the very least skeptical of the supposed benefits and skeptical of what the power dynamic really is. So that if you are a teacher and you are being told that your AI teacher kind of bot that you were supposed to deploy on your students is actually making your job better and making your students more excellent, mm-hmm, I think you should at least be suspicious of it. Maybe you play with it, whatever. At least cast suspicion on anything that these tech corporations are pushing, mm-hmm, on us, because more than likely it's going to enrich them and empower them, and more than likely it's going to dumb you down. That has been the history of devices as I see it for the last 10, 15, most of my life. Mm-hmm. I also would say, though, that it's going to be really, really important on a spiritual level to at least reckon with the fact that, as in the days of Egypt, when the Pharaoh's priests or the Pharaoh's magicians threw the staff down and snakes did, mm-hmm, crawl around,
right?
These companies do have the power of a certain degree of like material miracles. And it's going to be very, very difficult moving forward to preserve a faith in a sort of transcendent, immaterial, moral structure, a God which is not of this world, right? As Jesus would say, my kingdom is not of this world. One would hope that our Moses will have a staff and a snake that is able to compete. But I think yes. that it's just going to be very important for people to hold faith that that their traditions, that their God is in fact greater than the minor miracles that we are witnessing now and will witness in the future. So on those two levels, be suspicious of these tech companies, be at least hesitant to adopt, and also just be contemplative.
Yep.
Imagine a world in which all the miracles that your tradition's God is supposed to embody, that these miracles are now being performed by something that is completely and openly godless, as something that is very much mechanical and not spiritual. It may sound dark, but I you know, it may sound dramatic, but I think it's just going to get weirder and weirder and weirder, and it's not going to stop. And so unless you want to become part of that transformation, you're going to have to figure out how to be that rock
yeah.
in the stream and not be moved by the current.
For sure.
Such a great point.
For sure, though. The roles of parenting, grandparenting, all these mm-hmm. things. And I definitely think, man, if you got a kid in high school right now or somewhere like that, learning physical mm-hmm. tasks, you know, like the whole learn to code, you know, mm-hmm. they would say to the truck drivers, I think, I tell you what, there's going to be a demand for people that can do HVAC, you know, people that can frame a house, do mm-hmm. like those kind of tasks probably have the greatest trajectory, you know, in the job force than maybe somebody that can code. I mean, the world is shifting around mm-hmm. us. And, you know, one of the happiest people you see that's kind of managed this world the best is Tucker Carlson. And like the guy doesn't watch TV, not into social media. He hikes in the woods every single day. He's been able to stay sane a little bit mm-hmm. while being in an insane world. And the people that I see thriving the most spend at least some time unplugged outdoors, breathing air, unplugged from technology, and actually just thinking, listening, and hearing, you know, what's going on inside you, unencumbered by technology. And you're definitely one of them. And you look at this monster the most closely, and you're also the most respectful of how it can invade your world. So, Joe, your friend of the show, your friend of yes. us, thank you. We're going to help us keep processing this because it's bigger than any one of us can understand. Your book, The Dark Aeon.
Where's the best place for people to buy that, Joe?
You know, I prefer people go to the indies like bookshop.com, but you can also get it at the Amazon Beast. If you pay with your palm, they will readily provide you a copy. And I would also suggest if you're Bitcoin savvy, and I think a lot of people are these days, going to canonic.xyz, canonic.xyz. You can get it at a discount there, Bitcoin only.
Okay, very cool. And then your website is joebot.xyz. Joebot.xyz. Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Same handle on Twitter. Definitely follow him there. We'll put the links below.
We really appreciate your time.
In a world where technology surrounds us, our exposure to EMR, or electromagnetic radiation, is higher than ever before. With over 400,000 cell towers and antennas in the United States alone, not to mention Wi-Fi that runs 24/7 in our home, cell phones that are carried in our pockets hours on end, and hundreds of 5G satellites in our orbit, common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, heart palpitations, insomnia, and so much more. Start protecting yourself now. Introducing Redemption Shield, your EMF protection products. With over 700 five-star reviews, Redemption Shield is leading the way in shielding and grounding products, taking inflammation out of your body with grounding bed mats, grounding bed sheets, hats, scarves, Wi-Fi router covers, cell phone bags. Come and see us today at redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded. Redemptionshield.com. Use code FLYOVER and save 10%.
You know, I don't think it's any kind of a big secret if you watch our show, kind of a part, you know, our production meetings, everything else. Our heart and goal is if you watch this show for a year, you won't know when it happened or whatever, but you're going to listen to enough guests that over the course of a year, you're going to look back and say, you know, I'm probably using less pharmaceutical drugs than I did before. Yep. I probably have like 20% less debt than I did a year ago. I probably, you know, lost a few pounds. I'm probably eating, you know, meals with my mm-hmm. family and kids, you know, each night. I'm going on a date night. I'm reading my Bible in mm-hmm. private alone. I'm kind of like there's this trend of like the world's crazy. We want them to do certain things. But if you listen to this show, we bring on guests that kind of help you to trend some of these things yourself, you know, mm-hmm. regardless of what's going on outside, your world can be less crazy. And there's nobody that really helps with that process of helping you be the best that you can be than the one, the only Dr. So Good, Mark Sherwood.
Yay!
Y'all are so kind. I appreciate you all. Love you all so much.
The man, we are so excited to have you on the show today.
We've been hitting this book. You have the forward by J.J. Virgin. I think we started listening to her like maybe in 2011 or 12, mm-hmm. something like that podcast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is – in spite of things being bad in the world, there's people that are dedicated, like, you know what can I do to mm-hmm. enhance my processes? I think she's one wrote the foreword to this book, The Quest for Wellness. But the deal with wellness is, as much as the world's changing and there's iPhones and computer chips and robots that are self-thinking and then enhancing humans with machines, mm-hmm. all this stuff, in the dirt and getting outside, breathing air, seeing the trees, hearing God, turning off sounds, like, there's so much that we can do to have our human existence be the best mm. And as close to possible as maybe what Adam experienced in the Garden of Eden, where he walked with God in the cool of the day. And he wasn't on ibuprofen. He wasn't on any kind of opioids. You know, he was as healthy as he could be. And that seems to me like when you cut it all down, that's what you and Dr. Michelle do, mm. is get people to their body operate the way God originally intended it. And not masking things or mm-hmm. or drugging yourself out and just watching Netflix and getting by, like, feeling great, living great at a high level.
Yeah, I agree with that, you know, and God's gifted us in that area. And it's taken me a long time to even acknowledge that, you know, because you don't want to appear egotistic or whatever. That's not the point. You know, egotistic ego is edging God out. I'm not going to do that. I give him all the credit every day. We get the same thing we chance to do, David and Stacy, with walking and talking with God every day. There's no difference between Adam and ourselves. No difference in Jesus really walking the earth. We have all those capabilities ourselves if we just really grab a hold of that. Problem with mankind right now is we've forgotten that, and we don't focus on that. We're not taught that. We're not modeled that. Therefore, we divert and subvert our own ability to communicate with the great physician, the healer, the creator every day, and we give that over to man. Therefore, we open the door to allowing. It's not mankind controlling us. We're allowing mankind to control us by our own lack of awareness of God and his sovereignty and his availability to us.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I remember during COVID, and we dealt a lot with you during COVID. You had 10,000 patients, zero deaths during that time. Absolutely phenomenal. And a lot of our family members, including ourselves, we worked with you all when we had COVID. And one of the things that you told us was, get off anything processed, you know, try to, you know, stay as close to the Garden of Eden as you possibly can. And I think that's a really interesting thing, because that should be probably a part of everybody's daily diet. Because if you're doing that when you're sick, why not do that when you're healthy, to your body always sure. constantly rejuvenating itself?
We have been taught and cultured into thinking over the last several decades that we don't do anything until we get sick or it's too late. And then the first course of action is go to the doctor. And again, that whole thing is just completely backwards in thinking. What if we realized we weren't born with medication deficiencies? And what if we realized that God didn't create us deficient in the ability for our immune system to respond back and fight? And all we're doing, my wife and I, and you guys know this, all we're doing is communicating basic truth. It's not complicated. It doesn't have to be hard. We don't fall back to the excuses that say things like, well, you know, it's too expensive to be healthy. No, I believe that God's going to provide for his people, whatever the cost. You know, currency is nothing more than pavement in the kingdom of heaven. We step right on that gold. So why are we letting that be something we think is the salvation point? So, you know, I look at it like real simple. Trust God to supply the needs for his people, you know, and just point people that direction. And guess what? Good things happen. We've had no one have any long haul COVID or all that stuff. We don't have that. So to me, it's kind of foreign. I mean, I get it. But when people do the basic things, the body, the way God constructed it in his own image, it's the only thing like that, is more than able to overcome that.
That's huge.
You know, there's the term biohacking. I want to dive into that word just a moment, because you look around, you know, in our lifetime now, we're old enough to kind of look back, and things that were non-existent when we were in grade school and high school and stuff. And you look at the kids' experiences now, if you have kids over now, it's like, man, you got peanut allergies and this and that. We had Steve Chocolani in studio the other day, and he, you know, is born in Thailand, lived in Australia for a long time. And he goes, it's weird when you come to America because there's so many problems that people experience
due to food,
due to their food and what the GMOs, all the lobbyists, you know, for mm-hmm. the food manufacturing, you know, the people that we elect to sort of protect us from those things mm-hmm. are operating more in their best interest than the people that elected them. And there's man-made problems and ailments that we never dealt with before. America is 6% of the world's population. We consume 85% of its pharmaceutical drugs. And if you just sit in an airport or sit outside Walmart or anywhere, watch people walk around, it's not like, oh, well, clearly it's paying off because everybody's just thriving. Mm-hmm. You know, most people are limping around, like 1 in 4 people have a crutch, a limp, a scooter, you know, something. They're not thriving. So it's like all of this man-made, we're covering stuff up. And then all the junk in the food that makes it last, you know, mm-hmm. forever, you know, without going bad. You know, McDonald's French fries is going to be good for a decade or more, you know. And so you look at all those things we're putting in our body. So it's kind of like we're being biohacked by big pharma and big food industries. But that term biohacking, like we can do that the other way.
That mean exactly? Biohacking, what is that?
Well, look at it like on the concept of like a video game. You know, remember the old video games and we'd got the cheat codes, right? The cheat codes would help you win. I mean, that's a good way to look at it. So we don't hold cheat codes. We have already been hacked by cheat codes to get us controlled by a system that's not designed to get you well. You mentioned, David, we are the embarrassment of the world. I've been around the world and you guys have too, and people laugh at us because we're so wealthy, but we're so stupid and we're so rebellious by nature. And we, because we know the answer, don't do it. And you mentioned the politicians, our government is completely compromised. All of them take money from big pharma. It doesn't matter who you look at, whatever, it's purchased. And so all that said, when you look at biohacking, we've already been hacked and we're already controlled in a system that's got us in bondage and we don't know how to get out of it. But I'm here to tell you that we know the cheat codes, if you will, to really biohack the human experience to give it what it needs, the information it craves, and precipitate the predictable action, which is optimization of our biological aging process and speed. You know, we have this chronological age that's based upon, you know, the watch, calendars, clocks, all of this, but that is not the purpose. The purpose is the biological aging process, not chronology. And so I'm here to say that we can actually live in a better pace of aging, live younger, older, and perhaps die younger, older. And it's not about adding, years of life. It's about adding life in the years, as we say.
That is
well,
really good.
I know we're in our 50s now. We got 3 grandkids. I feel better and I'm operating at a higher level, more clarity, more energy, more creative for sure than I was in my 40s. There's like no comparison. I would just kick the crap out of my 40-year-old self. You know, now, I look back, what was I doing? You know, my 40s, I was, you know, a lot more stressed out. I let things bother me more, but also the way I was sleeping messed up, the way I was eating, messed up. And I was, when my eating was more focused on trying to keep my weight at a good level. It didn't really have a lot of focus on, well, how much GMOs am I taking? How much processed food am I eating? All these things that make you sluggish and slow, the hormones, I mean, every different, all those factors. So definitely in my 50s is way better than my 40s, no doubt, and probably compete with David in his 30s. And so, but that's not an accident. It's like, that's a mystery. I don't know what happened. There are specific things and your injection into my world, you know, in the way that I think and process, some of it is, you know, are working with you and blood work and all that stuff, but also just a way of thinking like, man, I was sabotaging my own process.
Most people, David and Stacy, are already sabotaged in the way they're thinking. You mentioned the key thing, you know, and I love you guys dearly. And the greatest things we can give you is what God's given us. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can plant those seeds that actually create a difference in perception, thinking, interpretation of the world, implant seeds of wisdom, you know, to kind of get us out of that culture. You guys are not even really in the second best half of your life as per the biological aging calendar. And so, you know, it's really about optimizing all function. And to your point, it is spiritual, emotional, physical, financial health all in one, you know, as we talk about in that book. And that's important. You can't separate those things. In America, we've got an art form of separating those things. And when you separate, you segregate. And when you isolate, you can get dominated by the enemy. So that's got to keep them together. very important to think about. But then you think about this, we also put together nutrition, sleep, stress management, movement, hormones, peptides, genetics, even the whole study of glycobiology, you know, the glycome, which is a little bit of weird, my weird psychotic, mind goes to, I want to understand the immune system even better and make it younger in its responsiveness. But, you know, if you can get a person optimized in all those areas, you know, they look just like David and Stacy Whited. And it's because I see you guys flourished. And it's not about Mark and Michelle getting any credit at all. It's about seeing the blessing of someone else flourishing and the ability of them to maximize their experience on planet Earth and shine bright for the whole world to see. God's blessed you guys. And that's awesome for you to shine bright and become influencers that you are. That's not by accident. It wasn't because your hard work. It was because God gifted you, but he gave you the skill within you as you put this all into practice, yeah. You guys. And it's a blessing to see.
It's easier to work hard when you feel great, too.
That's,
you know, we 2023, we had 5 weekends off that we weren't traveling, doing something, that we were home, you know, and man, Rip never even had a sniffle. Never had a cold. Mm-hmm. We were in airports traveling, you know, hugging people everywhere, all this stuff.
Meeting thousands of people every weekend, and like you, Dr. Sherwood.
And not even like, oh, I'm walking around with a mask or feel bad. Or I felt amazing. Again, not even a sore throat. Not one thing at all. No. Now, you guys are kind of in a rare group when it comes to the medical profession. You actually study biological age. And we've talked about this in private. How old are you and Dr. Michelle? You're not supposed to ask somebody their age, and maybe women don't want their age, you know, thrown out there. But like, how old are you guys scientifically?
Well, there's multiple age clocks, and I can tell you, our biological age is not our chronological age. It's much less. Immune system age is, my wife is 22 and I'm 20, respectively.
Wow.
Some of the age clocks with cellular replication and it's called external aging clocks. I'm in my upper 30s, low 40s, and so is my wife. And, you know, it's just putting the pieces together. And we've been working on this a long time, you know, until we got it really where we could. We kind of become this N of one, N of two experimentation. And you're right. We do things in a way that's not done. We don't really have any colleagues per se. It's not because we don't want them, but it's because it's learning is not finite. It's infinite. You have to keep asking this powerful question. Why is that? Why is that? Why can't we do that? Or why can't we achieve this? And if you continue to be curious about that, you know, lack of curiosity kills the human experience. Curiosity enhances and fulfills the human experience. And I think if we do that. And it's been a neat thing. My wife and I are still learning, you know, we try to do this, but it's cool to see that, you know, and are we trying to do better with it? Yes. And this is some things we, you know, passed off to you guys and it's been a neat journey.
Okay. So before we started recording, you showed us this bottle. Can you hold it up and tell our Flyover family what it is?
So this is one of my favorite little biohacks, and this is a hydrogen production bottle. And you guys have been using hydrogen little tablets. They're magnesium metals that are put in the bottle, and they fizz like Alka-Seltzer, and they create hydrogen in the bottle. Hydrogen is the smallest molecule that's known to mankind on the periodic table. Number one, right? It can cross every barrier of the body, including the brain, into your it is able to cut in half every excessive dangerous free radical, which damaging other cells, and it creates inflammation in the body, which is the precursor to all disease processes. So could this be a key to mitigating disease processes? Studies, 2,000 of them, say yes. And what you do with this, real simple, and I just got a bottle here. I'm just going to show you real quick. I put a little water in here. Holds about 8 ounces. Super easy. Do that. Put the lid on like this, real simple. And it's got a little USB charging port over here. And I push the button, light comes on. You'll see little hydrogen bubbles begin to go in the bottle. And 5 minutes is done. And all you do is drink it, real simple. And you know, it kind of, in my mind, it beats the tablets because the tablets kind of turn the water dingy gray. This is just pure clean water. And
that is so cool.
Water, so drink it, man. It's easy.
Okay. And what does that do to the body then?
It goes in every single tissue, every single cell, and it reduces excessive inflammation. Now, as I stated a moment ago, all disease processes that you mentioned, David, earlier that are not usual for today, all, not some, have chronic systemic inflammation in all of them. So when you look at optimization of the biological aging process of speeds, we're 65% water. Mm. When you drink water, make it count. To me, this is a no-brainer. Everybody needs this. It's real simple. And, you know, children need it. I've got NFL players using this. Big deal. I was flown up to the NFL Combine to talk to the team docs about hydrogen technology because the players were bringing it to their attention. They're like, what is this? Mm-hmm. So this is not something that's new to us, but it may be new to the listeners. But this, to me, is one of my favorite little biohacks.
I love
now, it. Now, I drink a lot of water. That's been a big, you know, focus is mm-hmm. sometimes you get busy and whatever, cut out soda, you know, and some of these things. It's like drink water all the time. Would this be the water you would sip on all day, kind of keep doing that? Or do you do like a bottle in the morning when you first wake up and then you just drink like, you know, regular water the rest of the day, purified water, or and then again another one at night? Like what's the flow? What's the prescription for this?
Either or both. Okay. I've noticed that if this is visible, and I've got this from thousands of people tend to drink more because it's visible. Right. It's portable. It's right mm-hmm. in front of you. It looks kind of cool. Blue light comes on. We drink more water. But if people can just drink one when they get up, drink one midday and drink one before bed, that matches in excess of all the study material that I've looked at through PubMed, 2000 studies. And I've read almost all of them that says that this thing right here, ability to carry hydrogen into all of our cells, it is a massive game changer for us. Globally with the health pandemic. Now it's mainstream in Asian countries, but in America, there's going to be a fight. Mm-hmm. You know that, but it is what it is. So I'm grateful to get the opportunity to even, you know, share that technology.
Okay. So how do people get this, Dr. Sherwood?
Well, your wonderful, skillful son, Colton, has got a link right there on the drsogood.com website. So people can go right there. And the cool thing about this is this bottle, you know, and by the way, once you pull the cap off, you got about 25, 30 minutes to drink before it dissipates out. People need to know that, right? And so one of these bottles is 219, and this is a USB port charger here. So it's made of titanium down here in the metal. So it's not going to leach metals. We test all these bottles and we also put a little thing on there. You can get some money off just for flyover, you know, just for being, you know, hey, like father, like son, like husband, like wife, get to, there you go.
I love it. Okay. And then if somebody's listening today and they're like, man, okay, I want to work with you. I want to be a patient of yours. What's the best thing to do from there?
Yeah, just jump on that link that says learn more about consults. And we do a free webinar once a month. And it is free, David and Stacy, as you guys know. And we present and then we allow the prospective people to ask questions. And then if they want to work with us, we talk about all those little biohacking things that we just talked about, the chart you just showed. They want to work with us. They can. They don't pay any money until and if they decide to work with us. Then we schedule a consult and off we go into making them younger, older.
I love it.
Well, you got Hercules as a client. So, you know, Kevin Sorbo.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah, that's exactly
he
right.
He didn't become Hercules by accident. So it took some.
We call him Operation Zeus now. So there you go.
Yeah. I love it. So flyover family, go to drsogood.com. You can find the water bottle there. And you can also learn about that webinar.
Hey, let me ask you a question before we close, because some people will see that like this is titanium, a lot of technology. These things aren't produced by the bazillions, you know, so, you know, there's some cost involved in just that. But what if somebody looks at it and it's like $200 for a bottle, you know, like, now they might not blink at $200 for a prescription that just masks a symptom, but that's a separate subject. What would you say to someone like, man, I know there's titanium in it. Like what, why so much for, I can get a Yeti for $50.
Well, I want my water to not have a leaching effect of plastics, BPA, or metals. Those are toxins, and they're well-known estrogenic and inflammatory carcinogenic compounds. Each of these bottles, each of them, are tested individually for specific saturation of the hydrogen in the water and for heavy metals, both. We wanted construction that was going to last and not do that. This is high quality. And anytime you get a car, you should get a car that's not going to break down in 6 months. Anytime you get a house, you should not get a house that's going to fall apart in 1 year. Yep. And anytime you get something to drink water in, my goodness, what is $200 compared to the cost of sickness in perpetuity going to the doctors? It is cheaper to be well than it is to be sick. And for every person out there, we spend hundreds of dollars on cheerleading uniforms, sporting equipment. One of the greatest things you give your child and your family is the gift of health and the gift of life. That is found in just the ability to have water, because without water, we die. Make it count.
Oh, that's really good.
And water is going to boost you up and give you,
that's
give you
right.
eliminate inflammation, all kinds of good stuff. So I'm excited. All right. I'm going to get one. I'm going to try it out. And hopefully you won't even recognize me next time. I'll be like, wow, what are you doing? You look incredible. All right. I appreciate it. Performing at a high level takes a lot to do what we do. So thank you for that. And drsogood.com. And you can go there and you get a discount for being part of the Flyover family. So we appreciate that.
Thanks again for your time, Dr. Sherwood.
Hey, friends. You already know the answer to this, but we'll ask you anyway. If you stay away from your favorite junk food for a month and then go back to supersizing it, will your health improve?
Well, that's the thing about change. To change, we have to be as consistent as possible.
And when we go back to an old habit, it's not the end of the world. We just get back at the new habit.
Before you know it, real transformation is evident to you and others.
That's why we offer a bunch of helpful bonuses when you subscribe to Kingdom Fuel.
Kingdom Fuel is our complete nutritional meal shake.
It's the simple start to a transformed life, and we'll auto ship every month so you don't run out.
You'll receive 2 free shaker cups, free access to our video courses, and a monthly call with us filled with practical inspiration.
Just see the link below or on your screen and subscribe today.
Time it is. It's time for an economic update with Dr. Kirk Elliott. Welcome.
Well, it's so great to be with you. Take two. So I'm so glad we live in a country where our tax dollars are used to get high-speed internet everywhere for everyone. The hotel I'm at has zero connection, so I'm in the car.
Crazy. Well, we are so glad you joined us.
Super pumped. We started in your hotel room, moved back out to the car. You're on the road. But, you know, luckily this – we have guests on for different reasons. I've been friends with you for 25 years. We'll just say this. We're more interested in what's inside your head than what's wrapping your head. And so as long as we can hear you good, we're getting the information, it'll work out good. People log on to this. You know, we have eye candy guests and you're brain candy. Let's just say it.
Yep.
Brain candy.
You know, you just said I'm not eye candy. That's all I heard.
I'd say you're both.
You can't have everything, all right? You know, know your role.
Hey, I
will say this, though. We were out Friday night with the dinners, the family. Somebody came up. Hey, David Stacey, I watched your guys' show. Wanted to know about economic update. And you were talking about different guests, the prophetic, and want to know about what you're doing. We were at a shooting range last night. Guests came up. Man, love this. He'd been a couple live events. People are interested in the economy like never before. And it's like mainstream media is kind of catching up with the, they're starting to dance to a drum beat that you've been drumming, you know, for a couple of years saying, you know, mathematically, this is what's happening. And the policies are beginning to impact their everyday lives.
It is. I mean, that's really a great segue to what I wanted to talk about today. You know, I remember a show that we did in January of 23.
Wow. January of 23.
And people could go back to the archives probably and watch it, but we were talking about the FDIC having only 1.7% of all deposits insured. And it's like, well, this, remember, okay, January of 23, before the banking crisis has all happened with Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, Credit Suisse, First Republic, all going into FDIC receivership and going belly up, right? So we were sounding the warning bell then. And so how do you figure that? So all of the deposits in America at every bank, at every credit union, right? So 1.7% means the assets of FDIC only cover 1.7% of deposits. Mm. Okay. So
that's scary.
It is scary because forget about the $250,000 FDIC insurance, right? It's like 1.7%. So then what happened? So, and then in March and April, you had all these banks that started failing, mm-hmm. big banks, or, you know, these big regional banks. So what happened to FDIC since then? Well, there was more banks than the big five that we saw that went under. There was a bunch of small ones that didn't really make the news because they were kind of small. But since then and today, a year later-ish, FDIC now has 0.74% of all assets covered.
Whoa.
So they've lost more than half of their asset base bailing out these banks. Okay. So
that sounds like a major problem.
That's a big deal. If you have $1,000 in the bank or you have $100,000 in the bank, nobody wants to lose what they have. It applies to everybody.
It applies to absolutely everybody. And one of the things that we've talked about over the year is, okay, get out of debt. Number one, number two, how do you invest in a time like this when the markets are overvalued, when wages are coming down, when inflation is persisting, interest rates are going up, banks are undercapitalized? It's like, well, okay, get out of debt and don't have too much money in the banks. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been shouting this from the rooftops for a long time. Now, with only 0.74 and the news that's coming out is actually significantly worse than it was in March and April when Silicon Valley Bank went under and all those mm-hmm. other five. So recently, over the last 2 weeks, there was a big CEO on Yahoo Finance, CEO of a massive real estate, national real estate, you know, like a developer kind of a person who's always getting loans from banks to build commercial real estate, to build, you know, housing developments, whatever. His prediction is that over 500 more banks are going to fail or be consolidated over the next 2 years. Okay.
500.
500. Look what happened when five banks failed. FDIC lost more than half of its asset base, bailing these banks out. Now, this is just one guy, right? But he's very prominent guy who understands banking finance because that's the world that he lives in. Well, let's look at another more prominent person. How about Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve? So he said there's going to be bank failures this year caused by commercial real estate losses. So he's sounding the warning signs. We're going to have more bank failures. So here's my point. When you've got five banks that failed, FDIC lost more than half of its asset base. What if that real estate guy is wrong and there's only 10 banks that fail instead of 500? That's still twice as many that failed during Silicon Valley Bank, and they already took up half of the FDIC amount. It's like, oh my word, FDIC is going to go insolvent. And remember, like, it was either 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, David and Stacy, I said that the banking crisis is going to be the biggest financial news story of the year.
Yep.
I think it's going to happen. And I hate to be right about that kind of stuff, but when banks are undercapitalized, when you've got FDIC insurance that's so underinsured, and now you've got all these other things that we've talked about on previous shows, and I hope that people are listening. I hope that they're listening, because with Basel 3 and the reserve requirement going from 0 to 20% means banks have to somehow come up with 20% of all of their deposits to stay in compliance, or they're going to either go out of business, be shut down, or be consolidated by a larger bank. And then in addition to that, a week ago, March 11th, the emergency funding for stressed banks ended from the Fed. The bank temp funding program that we've talked about expired. There's no more emergency funding for failing banks. So that's the one thing that caused not more banks to fail, right? Because everyone was cheering and applauding the Fed and saying, oh, look at how amazing you are. We had these five bank failures and then somehow it just stopped. Mm-hmm. They stopped the contagion, right? Well, they didn't really stop anything. They put a Band-Aid on it by providing this emergency funding to undercapitalized banks so they wouldn't go into FDIC receivership. Okay, this is very important because now that that funding is gone, the next bank that fails, it's on the verge of failure, they're not getting emergency funding. That program is done. That stimulus is gone. So now it will go into FDIC receivership, and sadly, FDIC is running out of money. I mean, every person in America, like you said, David, whether you have $100 in your bank account or $100 million, it doesn't matter. FDIC is underinsured, and I would, from all of my heart, not just the bottom of my heart, from all of my heart, I would say, get money out of the banks. Now, not all of it. You still need funds to operate on. You still need an emergency fund. You still have monthly expenses, right? But if you have excess in there that you're concerned about, I would not have a lot in the banking system right now because I think this is the system that's about to fail. So I start asking myself these weird questions in my head. And maybe it's because I live in this world way, way too closely when the financial world. But it's like, what is the safest thing in people's minds? And financially, their bank accounts. Mm-hmm. You're out of the market. You're not tied to the stock market or the bond market.
And that's the image.
Yeah, you just have money in the bank. But that's a false image, right? Because what do banks invest in? The same thing you and I would. Mm. Banks invest in stocks, in bonds, in mutual funds, in companies, in real estate. Same exact things you and I would invest in, except on a larger scale because they're a bank, right? So here's where we start connecting some serious dots. And why would the government, knowing this, they know that banks are supposedly the safe haven thing in people's hearts and minds. Well, why would they stop emergency funding during an election year? Because if we get a run on the banks, people lose confidence in everything. I mean, last quarter, 44% profit drop from banks across the board. They are running out of money, right? So why wouldn't they keep that emergency funding going? So number one is truly the government knows they can't keep printing money because they're going to have to keep raising interest rates. The economy is so fragile. And they're realizing with the BRICS nations rising up, taking away petrodollar status, they don't have a lot of money other than printing, and they can't afford to do that. So why would they stop this one thing? Are they stupid?
Well, why would they be so transparent? Is Jerome Powell, like, his job is like, if you're on a flight and the engine goes out on a plane, the pilot's going to come on and be like, everything is fine, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be
keep you calm.
Like their job is to say things are fine no matter what. So when Jerome Powell, his role is to keep people's pulse calm because he's an extension of the administration. And so, you know, it shouldn't be, but he is. And so when he is saying these kind of dire warnings, and his job is to, you don't want, if the pilot comes on, I'm like, okay, ladies and gentlemen, I would say some prayers, get your, you know, trouble. get yourself right with God at this moment. Like that is a big warning.
Yeah.
It is. So that's kind of a funny story because not this flight, but the last one I was on, we're getting ready to land. And all of a sudden the plane, they put on the afterburners and the plane goes like almost straight up in the air. Stuff is flying around. People are screaming.
Oh my gosh.
Screaming. And we were, the landing gear was down. We were getting ready to land. And the pilot comes on and says, sorry. Obviously an old military pilot would be my guess. Had to take quick evasive maneuvers because a plane was coming right at us and we had to get out of the way. So sorry, everybody. It's like, what?
Oh, it's like, no.
Last second warning, right? But by that point, everybody knew that there was a problem because the plane was going like straight up in the air. This is a commercial airliner. So this is the same as this, what's happening now. We are not going to know until it's almost too late. Mm-hmm. Right. Because once people get this warning sign of oh, banks are failing and there's a run on the banks. Not enough people are going to be able to get to the banks in time before there's a run and capital runs out. Right. So I have to think these people aren't stupid. I think that they're evil. There's a difference between being evil and being stupid, because we know that what their plan is, what their agenda is, and that's to usher in central bank digital currency like we've talked about for a year. If you have a crisis that's big enough, even a reasonable person would say, if I'm going to be divorced from my money, I'll give the government anything. Just fix it. Just fix it. I don't care what freedoms I have to give up. I don't care if it means the ability to, or non-ability to buy or sell, because they can flip you off if your ideology doesn't match up, right? They can flip off that switch and saying, you can't spend money here. You can't spend money there. You can't do it on this and that. So no reasonable person would ever say that that's a good idea.
Right.
Right. To have spyware on your bank account by the government. But yet, crisis bad enough, they will give that up. So the second half of my brain says, okay, this is all intended. They want this to happen so they can actually get their way, be the saviors of the world with banking and usher in something new that is all about people control. But no matter how you look at it, whether that's the agenda or whether they're just truly run out of money, the end result is the same. And that is, anybody who has any money in their bank account too much, you should get it out. Now, what else is this banking crisis going to affect? Your retirement accounts, right? Because let's say you've got an account at Schwab or Fidelity, and it's an IRA or your 401k or whatever, and you've got cash in there in a money market. Where are money market accounts held? In banks somewhere. It's a banking asset. Cash is always a banking asset. So this is going to affect retirement accounts, even if it's not at a bank. And when start to pull money out, the end result in your mind is, I'm pulling back. I'm going to save for a rainy day. You're going to stop investing. You're going to stop spending. You're going to stop doing everything. Markets come crashing down. I mean, I know I'm painting a dismal picture, but the banking industry is the core of the financial world, right? It's where everybody holds their assets. And I think this is a big deal. Really big deal.
It is a big deal.
Ronald Reagan famously said, it goes, the scariest sentence in the English language is, I'm from the government. I'm here to help you. You know, and so if they're creating a crisis that only they can solve, you know, it's a scary time.
But Americans are feeling it. They're very aware. It's part of a lot of people's conversations. Like David said, just even over the last few days, as we've been out and about and just seeing, you know, flyover family members or just talking to people, that is part of the conversation of, well, okay, what's going on in the economy? I have to do something. I mean, we're receiving calls now. What do I do? Okay, how do I get a hold of Dr. Kirk? You know, because now people are like, I need to do something. They've been maybe listening for a couple of years. Now they're like, I need to make a move.
I'm like, you get a hold the same way you did 2 years ago or 6 months ago. It's like just, but move, because you need the thing with silver that makes it so appealing is it has a high floor, and it's actually a floor. It's not built on paper mache. It's a thing.
Right. It actually is a thing. Things never go to zero. And I was thinking while you were talking, it's like, I can think of a scarier sentence other than, we're here from the government and we're here to
what?
Help. Is, hey, I'm Joe Biden and this is my counterpart Kamala, and we're here to run the country.
Kidding. That in November of 2020, everybody's like, what?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's still Ronald Reagan's sentence, but it carries different weight based on who's saying it. Ronald Reagan's saying it's a little different than Kamala Harris.
That is exactly right.
This banking crisis that we have is because, large in part, Bidenomics, lowering wages, increasing unemployment, inflationary pressures because they're printing money like there's no tomorrow, bad foreign policy putting export controls on Russia, which actually then caused Russia to go to China and say, hey, we need help. We just got booted out of the SWIFT system and we can't take international bank wires. This is what caused this new Axis and Allies power shift, is bad foreign policy, inflationary pressures causing a run on the banks. I mean, their economy is really bad, and it's because of their doing, right? So the solution, right? I don't want to leave people with this, oh my word, now what? My banks are going to fail. This is where you said it, Stacey. Silver is so good because it's a tangible asset. It's real. And it is going through the roof. We'll have to do another show where silver action is right now, because that is the answer to get out of a system that's broken, out of the inflationary world where they can cut you off from buying or selling, away from a system where your money might be divorced. Oh, by the way, it's no longer your money, right? After 2009, when you had Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers that went under, they changed ownership at the banks. Your deposits, your savings accounts, your money markets, your CDs, your accounts at brokerage institutions are now theirs. We gave up ownership. You can look at the documents and verify that I'm right, because I am. We gave up ownership to the financial institution because they had so much debt. They had so much derivatives debt that they needed to use your assets as collateral to be able to pay off their loans. You can't pledge collateral unless you own it. So they took ownership. We are now beneficial owners of all of our bank accounts, which means they can take it. Code in today's language that we've heard Janet Yellen, Jerome Powell, that is a bail-in. That's what a bail-in is, when your assets are used to bail out your own financial institution. Mm-hmm. I think the government is out of bailing out banks, which is why they stopped that emergency funding. And it's now up to us to bail out our own financial institutions. So we better be very careful what bank we go to, know the financial stability of it. And if you don't have too much money in there. I mean, I'm in the same boat as you are. I'm in the same boat as everybody else. We have a company that has millions of dollars of bank wires coming in because people are buying precious metals. I don't want to keep all that money in the same bank.
Sure.
So what is our CEO, Ashley, and I doing? We're opening up bank account after bank account after bank account to spread it out, because it's the safe and wise thing to do in a world that's upside down right now.
And here's the deal, too. As I'm listening to you, I just, you know, we grew up in Kansas, lots of tornadoes when we were growing up. And what would happen would a siren would go off, an alarm would go off that would warn you so that you would have time to get to your basement or to get to a safe place. I feel like that's what's happening right now. It's like there's an alarm going off because this tsunami, this issue is coming with our finances. And it's just the alarm's going off. Now we have to make a decision to get in the basement. And how do we get in the basement? We protect ourselves. We get ourselves out of the bank and into something tangible like silver, like gold, so that we can be safe financially during this time. You agree? I mean, that's what it feels like as you're talking. I feel like the alarms are going off just like a tornado is coming.
I mean, but this is the nature of God, to give us warning, to protect us, because he wants us to thrive, right? And I think it's that wisdom. It's that still small voice. It's that whispering in our ear. There's a problem. Get to safe ground. I mean, Stacey, as I watch even some of your prophetic shows, right? It's like this is an ongoing message, even from prophetic voices, that the economy is collapsing. You better get out of harm's way, right? And what is prophecy for? It's not to pound somebody down and say you're wrong and you're going to die. No, it's to say there's problems, but I am a loving God that's full of grace. It's full of mercy, and I have a solution for you. You know, that's been the model throughout Scripture, is here's the warning sign, but here's the answer.
Yeah. Amen.
Right? That's the nature. And so in the political world, in the economic world, the financial world, the spiritual world, all of these messages are coalescing into one, and it's there is an answer. There is an answer. And in the financial, I don't know what the answer is politically. I absolutely do not. I know what the answer is spiritually, always. Pray and go to Jesus.
Yep.
Right? In the financial world, I can't think of any other answer right now other than allocating into tangible assets and get out of that system.
That is huge. So Flyover family, you can go to flyovergold.com. It's a place that you can fill out your information. When you do that, someone from Dr. Kirk's team will get a hold of you to set up a free consultation. It doesn't cost you any money whatsoever to get answers to the questions that you have and find out what your options are. Or you can call 720-605-3900. Again, it's 720-605-3900. The alarm is sounding. It's letting us know there's a storm coming, and we're having an opportunity to put ourselves in a safe position. So Dr. Kirk, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. This is a crazy time to be alive.
Well, just in our lifetime, used to be where you'd hear your grandparents talk about how cheap gas was and stuff, and it was 75 years before, 50 years you know, before.
And so we've seen a lot of changes since Biden took office. $700 more a month
than what you needed in January of 21 when he took office.
You might hear these kind of things and think, oh, that's overwhelming. I can't control the government. I can't control what they're doing. I can't control the spending, but we can take care of ourselves.
You want to make sure that you're buying bullion from somebody that you can trust and someone that does not charge you a commission when you go to sell.
If there's going to be a commission, have it on the front end, not the back end when it skyrockets. And now you're like, oh my gosh, look at this big, huge commission I got to pay because it's on the back end before I sell it.
You can buy an ounce of silver for $23. So this is something everybody can get into. And if silver goes to $50, if it goes to $75, if it goes to $100, all of those profits are yours. And that's happening while the dollar is buying less and less at the actual grocery store.
So you can go to flyovergold.com, fill out your information. When you do that, someone from Dr. Kirk's team will get a hold of you to set up a free consultation. It doesn't cost you any money whatsoever. Or to do the same thing, you can just call 720-605-3900. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Flyover Conservatives podcast with David and Stacey Whited. Please subscribe, hit the notification bell, and leave us a comment below. Lastly, if you enjoyed today's podcast, share with those who came to mind. Be blessed and make it a great day.